You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
Listening to Cheese and Packers, a project powered by the Packernet Podcast Network. I am your host, JJ Leahy. Happy to be with you today. Oh, wait, that's not my line. That's your line, John. I got John Meerdink here with me today, co-hosting this episode. John is the host of Blue 58 over the Power Sweep, one of the better Packers podcasts out there. One of really just a couple of Packers podcasts that I catch virtually every episode of. John, I really appreciate you coming on here. I like the approach that you have to a lot of football stuff, including the draft, because it's the same way I like to look at stuff, which is let's just break out the numbers and see what the numbers tell us. That's just the way my brain enjoys doing football information the best. So I'm really pleased and honored that you are joining us today.
Well, I'm glad I could be here. Hopefully we can, hopefully I can at least talk about the draft without making a complete fool of myself, because it's, I was doing some mock drafts today and boy, my big takeaway is I am not good at this.
I think the closer we get to the draft, the less I like the players in this draft. I think if you would have taken a reading of my feelings on all these players 3 months ago, I would have been much more enthusiastic for players at basically every position. And now I'm going, they kind of all are underwhelming, and I'm just looking forward to seeing what they can do with the Packers coaching staff, working with our guys, but I don't have high expectations for contributions in year one, which, let's be realistic, that's, you know, a good expectation to have of rookies every year.
Yep. Just realize that these guys are going to have to learn how to play NFL football, and there's going to be some kind of learning curve for everybody. Every so often you find that guy like a Jamar Chase or a Justin Jefferson who's just a superstar from day one, but that's the exception and not the rule. So everybody's going to need a little bit of time.
So first and foremost, you guys go follow John on Twitter at John Meerdink. Make sure you check out his podcast. Again, that's Blue 58. John, I really wanted to introduce you to our audience and make sure that they are tuning into the stuff you have to say, because I think you do a good job of breaking down some complicated concepts into simple terminology that's pretty black and white and easy to understand. And so we're gonna dive into your draft rubrics. First of all, can you define the term rubric? Because most of us are not nerdy enough to use that term in our daily lives.
Sure. I got to give a shout out to old Art DeYoung back at Sheboygan County Christian High School, who used the word rubric almost every single day when grading our papers.
I haven't used it since high school.
Yep. So rubric is just a method by which you basically sort information. Do you hit this, this, and this? And if so, what does that say about the result that we're trying to achieve? So when you're looking at a player in the NFL draft, for me, it's helpful to set up some targets that you want these guys to hit and decide the extent to which they meet those targets. So the rubric for everybody that I use is a three-tiered system. You want guys that are athletic and productive together, or you want guys that are athletic and you can teach them how to be productive at the NFL level, or you want guys that are just productive in college and you hope they can translate that into the NFL. And the reason that I do that way is because football is a game of athleticism, and you want the utmost is getting those guys that are great athletes and have shown that they can play football at a high level already. If you can't have that, you might as well just get a good athlete and hope you can teach them to play football. And if you can't be a good athlete, at least show that you can do the things that you need to do to succeed at the college level. Hopefully we can find a small role for you in the NFL. What it means to be productive is going to vary a little bit by position, but that's the general approach.
So tier one is athletes who produced in college. Tier two is just athletes. And tier three is just guys who produce but are not athletes.
Right. Generally speaking, that's how it works. And there are a couple of exceptions in there. For running backs, we make some small exceptions, because guys that are athletic and productive at the college level just tend to be super duper athletes anyway. So tier three for that position is just guys that are the insane athletes. We introduced that this year. I just call it the monster tier. So it's just guys that have the most bonkers testing numbers. Maybe they're productive, maybe they're not, but you know, one thing is for sure certain, you're drafting a hot rod there. So that's the general approach.
All right. So at most positions in the draft, and I didn't do all of them because I ran out of time and I have a life. But for most positions in the draft, after I put together my big board, just from tape that I had watched, I went through and I took your metrics and divided these guys up into tiers and then ranked them accordingly on my own big board. So I took what you were teaching. I applied it. Let's dive in and talk about, since you already brought up running back, let's talk about running backs. What are the productivity thresholds that we're looking for here?
Sure. I have pretty low thresholds for running back productivity. Basically, you're just trying to screen out guys that didn't produce at all in college. So a tier one running back is a guy who has a speed score of 100 or more, who averaged 3/4 of a touchdown or more per game in college, and had at least one catch per game in college. Mm-hmm. Speed score, for people who aren't familiar, was developed by some analysts at Football Outsiders. If it wasn't developed by them, they popularized it. But basically, it's how quickly you move your mass. It rewards guys who are more thickly built and can run fast. And that makes sense for running backs, because you don't just want the willowy track star build. You don't want a guy who looks like Trevor Davis, the former Packers wide receiver playing running back, because if you send him through the middle of the line, he's going to get broken in half. He wouldn't want to do that, and you wouldn't want to do that either. The other stuff is just basic, you know, basic screening stuff. You don't want a guy who's a phenomenal tester but was so dumb he couldn't get on the field in college. So it's just some basic, like, could you do some basic running back stuff? And we go from there. So if you want to look at that for running back, some of our tier one guys for this year are Breece Hall out of Iowa State, Pierre Strong Jr. out of South Dakota State, and one of my most interesting prospects in the draft, Rashad White out of Arizona State. That's not the full list, but those are three of the, I think, the most interesting ones.
Pierre Strong is an interesting candidate because he had the highest yards per attempt at 7.1 of any of the guys that I ended up deciding were worthy of including on my board. But then he struggled in a lot of other areas. So he was hugely productive, but he did have 4 drops in the receiving game. He had 4 fumbles. His pass protection grade was pretty low. Actually, overall, as a receiver, he graded out pretty low. Do you take stuff like that into consideration when you're looking at this, or are you really just only looking at the positive production?
I really only look at the positives, and I will fully admit that's a weakness in the process here, but just so we can get something on everybody in the class, I try to do it this way. And Strong, to your point, there are some significant drawbacks there. He's got a lot of great athleticism stuff. He's phenomenally productive, but in addition to some shortcomings in the grades that you mentioned, he was also doing it at South Dakota State. So there's the question about, you know, can he project his talent from a relatively small school into the NFL. At running back, I think you feel a little bit better about that than at some other positions, because it's basically the same kind of responsibilities. You're mm-hmm. just doing against a lower level of competition. But still, he's put up some really interesting stuff. He's kind of in that sort of Aaron Jones mold. Not quite a one-to-one comparison, but sort of that leggy, a little bit lighter side running back, but sure fast enough with a 4.37 40.
Now, remind me, hopefully you have this in front of you, otherwise this question is going to be terrible. Remind me where Bryant Kobach out of Toledo fits into here, because I remember you talking on your podcast about him being a guy who met a lot of the thresholds you were looking at, but the tiny school he played at was a big question for you.
Right. So that's another good example of where scouting needs to add a little context here. So Bryant Kobach was a phenomenal tester. He had a relative athletic score of 9.71, was productive in college, but he went to the University of Toledo. And, you know, living in that area and actually working until very recently at the University of Toledo, I'm fairly familiar with their football program. The drawback with a guy like Kobach is that often when you're playing a position like running back, somebody is just going to get the touches. Somebody is going to take all the carries and get all the catches out of the backfield. Somebody's going to get that job. And it happened to be Bryant Kobach because he's a pretty good athlete. So he puts up all these phenomenal production numbers, and you got to take him with a little bit of grain of salt because he might be their only real offensive producer, and he's just getting fed the ball. I think on the running back episode, the example I used actually carried over from Ryan Russillo's podcast, talk about the NBA. You've got these guys who score 20, 25 points a game, and that looks great in the box score, but they just happen to play for a team where they're right. The only six on a scale of 1 to 10, where everybody else is a 4. Well, you're going to have that guy shoot because he's the only good one. Bryant Kobach might be a 6 on a team of 4s at Toledo.
All right. That's phenomenal information. So Pierre Strong, according to NFL mock draft database.com, he is projected as about a 5th rounder. So he's in your tier 1, but he's kind of a later guy who might be available. Is there anybody else in tier 1 who the Packers might be able to pick up on day 3?
So if we're talking about just those tier 1 guys, Rashad White, I should mention, is interesting too. He keeps sticking out to me because as I look at what people have written out about him, I can't get what they said at Pro Football Focus out of my mind when it comes to him. They called him a project at running back. And I don't think I've ever heard anyone described as a project running back before.
Nope.
Because just think about it. That's a position where you pretty much just are what you are. You're big, you can run fast, you can catch the ball. Well, if you can do that in college, you can do that in the NFL. Rashad White I forget his exact journey, but I think he started at a D2 school, then went to junior college, then ended up at Arizona State for his final 2 years. He's only played 15 college games, but he was phenomenally productive there. He had 20 rushing touchdowns, 2 receiving touchdowns, 50 catches in those 15 games. He's big, 214 pounds, ran a 4.48 40-yard dash. He's got all of the baseline stuff, but you can see why he's only a day 3 prospect. He hasn't done it a lot, and there's reason to wonder, you know, why he hasn't figured it out till now. Is he truly just that late of a bloomer at running back? Who knows? But he has intriguing measurables, I'll say that. I'll give you one more name if you're talking about some tier 1 guys at running back. Jerome Ford, also a fairly late guy.
Oh, yeah, Cincinnati.
Out of Cincinnati. And he, too, is pretty much all testing, which is barely meeting a couple of the production thresholds. But he's there, too. And you like him, I think, a little bit better than maybe somebody like a Pierre Strong, just because of the level of competition. It's slightly better. And he's done it for a little bit longer than a guy like Rashad White. But get a good athlete and hope for the best from there. And the Packers shouldn't be looking any earlier than day 3 anyway.
Yeah, those two guys. So Jerome Ford is kind of expected to go late 4th, maybe 5th round. The interesting thing to me between those two guys, Jerome Ford, not a bad athlete by any means, but clearly in a different tier from Rashad White. Rashad White had a 9.88 RAS, and Ford was at a 6.87. Looks like actually they updated that to 6.95. That must have been after his pro day, but definitely a big difference between those two guys athletically. It would make sense for Goody to swing on the athletic upside there.
Yeah. The thing you like about a guy like Ford is that while he has poor overall athleticism, he's got some good straight line speed. At 210 pounds, he still ran a 4.46 40. So that's why he gets bumped up, because that meets the speed score threshold. So if you're looking for just kind of the one cut back sort of archetype, that's generally the kind of thing those backs fall into.
Let's switch gears and talk about wide receiver, because that's the position that most of the listeners are going to be caring about the most. One of the downsides with wide receiver is you got a lot of the guys who are considered top prospects in this draft. We don't have all of their testing numbers on, so we don't have their RAS for several of these guys. Are you still able to project them athletically in your tiers or no?
Not a whole lot. There is some good stuff out there. I would recommend to anybody who's interested in doing some scouting in this sort of way to look at Paul Noonan of Acme Packing Company's wraps number. He did a big explainer on it a couple weeks back. Basically, it's a combination of RAS, relative athletic score, and a custom metric that he put together himself, basically comparing receiving productivities to some baseball metrics that I think some of the more stat heads out there might be familiar with. Mm-hmm. It's a great way to combine athleticism and productivity, but you got to have the testing numbers. So I would love to have testing numbers on a guy like Jameson Williams. The guy like that really hurts though is Drake London, because he did some testing stuff, but not all the testing stuff. So you can't really get a full grasp on what he can do. It looks pretty good for him on tape. I don't love the contested catch stuff with him, but he seems pretty productive. So I don't know. And to his credit, in the Acme Packing Company mock draft, when he had the opportunity to take him at 22, Paul even kind of held his nose and drafted Drake London and said, look, he's a consensus like top 15 pick for a lot of people. If he's there at 22, you should probably take him. So there's some of that in this process too. Like, everybody says this guy is good. If you got an opportunity, maybe you take him.
So Paul Newton's reps, I have those numbers in front of me. I'm just going to go through who he says are the top guys. We'll give you the top 10. We've got Christian Watson, no surprise, at number one, followed up by Kevin Austin Jr., Alec Pierce. That one surprised me that Alec Pierce was that high. Danny Gray, Jalen Tolbert, Jameson Williams, George Pickens, Velus Jones Jr., Jalen Naylor, and Calvin Austin III, with Tyquan Thornton bringing up number 11. I mentioned him just because he's been a guy that the Packers commentators have been talking about a lot ever since he came and visited Green Bay. Intriguing prospect athletically, who didn't produce very much in college.
Yeah, definitely an interesting prospect. Just as an aside on the receiver stuff, I'm really interested, and I don't have any kind of answer for this, at what gives for the Packers. So we know that the Packers have been super interested in these big bodied receivers basically since Brian Gutekunst took over. There aren't very many of those in the draft this year. If you're looking for guys that are, say, above like 205 pounds, you've basically got Christian Watson, Alec Pierce, Treylon Burks. It gets pretty slim. It's not a lot of guys. Tyquan Thornton is he does a lot of the things that the Packers like, but he's only 181 pounds. There are a lot of the skinnier track star types in this class, and I don't really know what you do with that or what the Packers end up doing with that.
It'll be interesting to see, because if a guy like Jahan Dotson is in your lap there, and he's not tiny, but he is a smaller guy, but just insanely productive in college, what do you do with him? Because he doesn't really fit their mold, although they did take Amari Rodgers last year because they felt like, despite being shorter, that he still met enough of their other thresholds. They liked him enough that they went ahead and took him anyways. But you're right, it is a short list. I'm looking, there's only about 20 guys total over 200 pounds in this draft. And looks like all of them are over 6 foot, which you'd expect being that heavy. But definitely not a lot of the top guys. It's a lot of really late round picks. And most of them have relatively poor testing numbers too. You're really honing in on just four guys really, who we have their RAS that are over 200 pounds and have a good RAS. That's Kevin Austin Jr., Christian Watson, Alec Pierce, and Isaiah Weston out of Northern Iowa.
Yeah. I like Weston a lot. He's kind of like Christian Watson, but not famous. but he's got some phenomenal testing numbers. There are a couple
Christian Watson from 2 months ago.
Right. There's a couple guys that I trust who have watched some film on him that think he can probably do it at the NFL level. I don't know. I'll take their word for it.
Who else is in your tier one who actually, I'm not even going to limit you just to late round guys. In your tier one, which players do you have at the wide receiver position?
So I've got Watson. I've got Kevin Austin Jr. I would like to talk about Alec Pierce just for a second, just because
I think Alec Pierce around here. Let's do it.
I think he's an interesting case study for the Packers. What do they do as they kind of try to rebuild their receiving core post Devontae Adams? So in theory, you're looking to get a guy basically like Sammy Watkins, who can play on the outside, who's got some speed, maybe not necessarily a big-bodied guy, but Alec Pierce fits a lot of what the Packers like to do. So he's big, big, tall guy, seems like he can run. He's been productive in a pro style system. He has about everything you can ask for, except in a lot of ways, he's basically Alan Lazard. Do you want two Alan Lazards in your top three of your receiving group? Personally, I probably don't, just, you know, looking at it as a roster construction question, but I don't think you can deny Pierce's, you know, ability and the fact that he can probably be an NFL receiver. So if he's there in, say, you know, the late second, or for some reason he's still there when you're on the board at 92, you haven't grabbed a second receiver yet, do you take him and just say, we'll figure it out later? I don't know, but I think he's certainly an interesting prospect, and he's one of the guys that I'm most intrigued by in this draft.
Yeah, one of the nice little differentiators between Pierce and Lazard is Pierce is, I would say, substantially faster. Alan Lazard's 40 time was a 4.55. Pierce has a 4.41, so that is definitely a difference that might make you feel a little bit more comfortable about how you could use those guys differently, but they are definitely similar players.
Yeah. Circling back to one other guy is Kevin Austin Jr. Now, there's some off-field concerns about him. I guess he likes to get in fights with his teammates. But as I've said to a couple people, you know, kind of off the record, who among us, you know, hasn't wanted to punch a teammate at some point. I'm not saying that's exactly what's happened, but, you know, you hear some things about suspensions and stuff like that there.
Right.
But I think his problem is that Notre Dame really didn't know what to do with him. And he's fun to watch. He's got arms like an albatross. He can run. He's pretty thickly built guy. If you're looking at a guy on day three and he's there, I would take a crack at him.
He almost feels like a no-brainer at 6'2", 200 pounds, being that he's projected to go in the mid to late sixth round. It just feels like with that athleticism and his college production, who cares if he's had, you know, fights with teammates and stuff? Worst thing that happens is you burn a sixth round pick to find out that, yeah, we really can't work with this guy and settle him down.
And, you know, there's some stuff I want to push back on too, on the off-field concerns. We always got to remember that a lot of these guys are 19, 20, 21 years old. There's a lot of people who are kind of knuckleheads when they were 19, 20, 21 years old. And just because these guys are getting drafted to play in the NFL doesn't change the fact that they are young men and they do stupid things from time to time. And a lot of guys, I bet if you ask them, that are now 30, 31, 32, did you do stupid stuff when you were 20? I would imagine you probably did. Maybe you didn't get in a fight with your teammate, but you probably weren't playing D1 football either.
All right, we're going to take a quick ad break, and we'll be right back here with more positions with John Meerdink.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply. We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right, a company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones. And to see what we find, learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, John, any other receivers that we should talk about, or do you want to move on to another group?
I think that's about all I've got at receiver. There's a bunch of guys that maybe don't fall into the tier one category that might be a tier two or tier three guy, but if we do that, we can be here all day.
All right, tight end has been a hot topic for a while with the Packers, especially now. You know, we're talking about possibly bringing in Darren Waller in a trade from the Raiders. Would be interesting. Either way, I think you have to add at least another body to that room, given that you lost Jay Sternberger and Tonyan has a pretty severe injury that is probably going to take a while to get back from. You need more bodies in the room, as much as we like Dominique Daphne, Josiah DeGuara, and Mercedes Lewis. Let's talk about some of the guys in this draft. One of my observations when I look at these 2022 tight ends is that there's a lot of parity in my eyes between a lot of these guys, not any super elite talents on the level of Kyle Pitts from last year. But once the run on tight ends starts, I think you're looking at a big old pile of guys who all are pretty comparable to each other in terms of college production, blocking skills, and even athleticism. What's your take? And talk to me about how we gauge the production metrics for tight end.
So I actually use the same production metrics at tight end that I use for receiver. Don't adjust it at all. I want guys that can be productive as receivers coming out of college. I don't really look at blocking at all. I should probably try to add in something about that in the future. But the reason I don't look at blocking a whole lot when trying to project college tight ends is that I just assume that every tight end you draft is probably not going to be a plus blocker for the first three-ish years that he's going to be in the NFL, mm-hmm. just from the standpoint of the amount of physical development that has to take place to get a guy to a point where he can block at a realistic NFL level. On top of that, NFL teams are asking less and less from their tight ends in terms of blocking. Now, the Packers are kind of an exception in that, but they've also got the one guy in the NFL who's like a super reliable run blocker all the time in Mercedes Lewis. There are others, obviously. George Kittle is a very, very good run blocker, but generally speaking, there just aren't a whole lot of guys out there. So I want to look primarily at the passing game too. My impression of the tight end class this year is that it's not very good. I've got, looking at my version of the horizontal board here based on Dane Brugler's metrics, I don't have a tier one guy available before the third round. Mm-hmm. Greg Dulcich out of UCLA is the first guy off the board who fits the broad categories that we look at. Jelani Woods, of course, is an interesting one there. But if you're looking at a late round sort of guy, the one that jumps out to me is Austin Allen out of Nebraska. He seems in a lot of ways like kind of the late career version of Jimmy Graham. He's not a perfect prospect by any means, but he's big and he's tall and he was a productive enough receiver. And if you can get any blocking out of him, you're probably doing pretty well at the pick. The plus side with him is that there's a lot of physical tools to work with. He's 6'8" and 253 pounds. Hopefully you can teach him how to get in the way at some point.
Yeah, Austin Allen, according to NFL Mock Draft Database, is projected to be an undrafted free agent. Would make sense, you know, like you're saying, with his athletic upside, for them to take a swing on him in the seventh round, which is, you know, kind of your just preferred undrafted free agency at that point. Anybody else earlier than seventh / UDFA territory that strikes your fancy?
Well, Dulcich and Woods are of interest to me. I think Dulcich, in particular, at UCLA, is an interesting kind of case study too, because he's a lot, I think, physically like Robert Tonyan. Mm-hmm. And if you look at his sort of statistical profile in his career at UCLA, a lot of wide receiver type numbers. 6'4", 243 pounds. The numbers I have him on him, that's on the somewhat smaller side for a tight end, though not quite as light as Tonyan even is. He is interesting to me. I don't know if they want to take him earlier than about the third round because of the other needs that they have. They right. do need to get a tight end. I just don't know where that shakes out relative to some of the other positions.
There's a few tight ends that are kind of fan favorites for Packers. Tell me where these guys fall in your rubric, or if they just get an incomplete grade. So first up, Jake Ferguson is a guy, you know, he's a Wisconsin guy, so a lot of Packer fans already like him because of that. But he's a guy who I get asked about nearly daily. Well, what do you think about Jake Ferguson? Where does he fall on your board?
He's off the board for me because of some poor testing.
What about I would assume that Jeremy Rucker just gets an incomplete and yep. can't get anywhere yep. in there as well.
Same
deal. What about Iowa State's Charlie Kohler?
Kohler is a tier two guy. So the tier definitions I have on tight ends are tier two guys are just high athleticism guys. So guys that are elite athletes and Kohler is that. Pulling up my exact numbers on him. I don't know where he falls in the production thing, but I can tell you that here in a second. Fairly productive, not just a super elite guy like the other three that we talked about, but not too far behind Dulcich. So he's kind of just barely in that tier two category. But you like his size, you like his athleticism, and seems like he's a fairly productive receiver.
All right, so maybe borderline.
Yeah.
Let's switch over and talk about offensive line because as any listener of this show knows, this is the position that I keep hounding on the most. I really want to restock the offensive line, and there's a lot of guys in this draft who I'd love to get my hands on. Who makes the cut for you in Tier 1?
Quite a few guys, actually, and these are based on the thresholds compiled by Justice Mosqueda originally back a few years ago about what the Packers do, so... A 10-yard split in the 40-yard dash under 1.8, a three-cone time under, I think, 7.5 or 7.6 seconds, something like that, 7.55, and then a short shuttle under 4.65 or something like that in that neighborhood. I've got, I think, 13 guys in Tier 1 here, and there may be a couple others that I'm missing. I think there's a guy out of North Dakota State who I don't have on the list because his pro day was late. But just running down the list real quick here, Trevor Penning out of Northern Iowa, Zion Johnson out of Boston College, Bernard Raymond out of Central Michigan, Abraham Lucas out of Washington State, who I really like, Alec Lidstrom out of Boston College, little lower on him just because of the size, Cole Strange out of Tennessee Chattanooga, Cade Mays out of Tennessee, Zach Tom from Wake Forest, Luke Wattenberg out of Washington, Logan Bruss from Wisconsin, Dawson Deaton out of Texas Tech, Zach Thomas from San Diego State, and Cameron Juergens out of Nebraska.
All right, a lot of depth there. It's nice to see so many guys who are projected to go in those later rounds. The Packers have a ton of picks. I'd love for them to take a guy or two early, but you can kind of count on them taking a swing or two in the fifth and sixth rounds like they always do. Nice to see that there's some guys who you know, match up numbers-wise. Let's talk about some of the names that were missing, some of the big names. Kenyon Green and Tyler Smith are two that I noticed right away that I was expecting to see there.
I think that was just a function of when these testing numbers were compiled. Smith out of Tulsa in particular, I think we just missed him on when his pro day went. So I don't know about him in particular, but I think he probably makes it. You know, given his profile, I think there's a good chance that he fits. But to your overall point, I do think they need to restock here on the offensive line. Probably, I hesitate to say even what direction that they should go, but there's a couple different ways they could go. Do they want to get just a pure inside guy? Do they want to get that guy who's a potential swing tackle? Do they want to get the guy who can bump between guard and tackle? There's a lot of different directions that they can go.
I'd like to add some more bodies to that room, especially given the crazy number of injuries we had last year. You felt stretched so thin by the end of the year. It would just be nice to have more guys that you can lean on. And, you know, we're obviously hopeful that Elgton Jenkins comes back and can play starting week one. But as of right now, we don't really have a starting right tackle.
Yes. And that is a big problem, especially depending on how you feel about I'm blanking on his name now. The big left tackle.
Nyman.
Yeah.
Yash
Nyman. And I've been banging the table for Yash Nyman for a year now, and I just completely blank on his name. That's what happens when you have two kids. That'll be my parenting advice for you. Just write down all the names that you want to talk about in perpetuity. But I think Nyman probably can play on the right side. I wouldn't be sold on him. Obviously, the Packers aren't because they made kind of the strange decision there in the playoffs to go away from him and start the recently recovered Billy Turner at a position he hadn't played in over a year. So, right tackle is a real problem there. I think you probably go with that guy who, you know, you feel comfortable enough with at tackle, and maybe he bumps into guard later. But I don't know. It kind of is going to depend how the board falls here.
So anybody at offensive line that you just really like a lot?
I do like Abraham Lucas, despite kind of the Washington State
stigma.
Yeah, I don't want to say issues, but Pro Football Focus had a number on him that only like 27% of his career offensive stats were run blocking stats, which is just bananas. But they throw the ball all the time.
Right.
The Packers like to throw the ball. He's a good athlete, so you figure you can probably get him out in space. Maybe he ends up being that right tackle of the future, or maybe, you know, he turns out to be Jason Spriggs too. You know, that's the other side of that coin. But I do like him a lot.
If Mike McCarthy was here, he wouldn't care at all about the run blocking. He'd say, can you keep Aaron Rodgers upright all day long? Because that's the only thing I care about.
Yeah. And he may have been onto something. Just broadly speaking, building around pass blocking is probably the way you should do it. But surely some run blocking ability is necessary, right? You got to be able to do it at least a little bit.
And Matt LaFleur loves to run the football. No question about that.
Right.
Let's flip over to safety, because if you're talking about positions that kind of make the most sense to swing at in the first round outside of offensive line and wide receiver, the two that pop up the most quickly in your brain are edge rusher and safety. A lot of talk about, are the Packers going to give Adrian Amos an extension? Is Darnell Savage the real deal long term? And in the meantime, who's going to be your third safety? Because you'd certainly need one. Who are the guys who meet your thresholds here in this bunch of honestly super athletes?
So there are four guys who fall into the tier one guys or tier one group, and that's Kyle Hamilton out of Notre Dame, Jalen Petrie out of Baylor, Marquise Ball out of Florida A&M, a little bit more off the beaten path there, and Daxton Hill. So we're broadly looking at guys that are elite athletes here, just to give us a manageable amount of guys to talk about. Because if you start including those middling or low end athletes, there just gets to be so many at defensive back because every team has a billion of them. I generally like a guy who has a career coverage grade or a final season coverage grade, excuse me, of 70 plus from Pro Football Focus. And then I want 20 or more ball hawks. And that's a number that was popularized by Bob McGinn, formerly of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, now of tiedunfootball.com. A ball hawk is basically any play on the ball. So a sack, a forced fumble, a pass defense, or an interception. If you compile 20 of those in your career, I figure around the ball enough to at least make a difference. So tier one guys meet all of those thresholds, and those four are the only ones in this class that meet all four. That's not to say there aren't a lot of good options beyond that.
Yeah, I took the next step, and I took those ball hawks and divided them by the number of games that you played. And with the information I had was only good for 2021. I don't have guys prior seasons, but Kyle Hamilton came in number one in that category with one ball hawk per game played. Kirby Joseph out of Illinois was the next guy up at 0.81. Where does he fall on your tiers? We don't have an RAS for him. So does he get an incomplete, or do you have sort of an athletic grade for him?
Let's see here. I may not have a grade on him just because of the lack there. But let's take a quick look here while we're talking. I suspect that he probably has a pretty good coverage grade.
90.6 in 2021. I don't know what it was before then, but
well, there you go. I think he probably, if he can cover it all, he probably ends up being in that tier one or at least tier two, because that's the second tier is guys who are elite athletes and have a solid coverage grade. With his size at 6'1", 203 pounds, the numbers I have on him, that seems like a pretty good prospect there.
Now, when you were giving us your qualifiers here for safety, you didn't mention run defense at all. Is that an element of the safeties game that matters a lot to you? Because Kyle Hamilton, for example, does not grade out very well as a run blocker or run defender.
I don't spend a whole lot of time worrying about that. I think that's a teachable skill, especially with how the Packers do it. It's more about fits than about than about tackling. It'd be nice, sure, if anybody can come down and stick the running back one-on-one, but how the Packers do it, they do like to get their guys coming downhill. As long as you can slow them down and not be a liability as a tackler, I think you're okay. And Hamilton in particular is just such a unicorn elsewhere that I think he, if you're you know, taking him off your board because of run stuff, you might be looking for things to downgrade him on more than anything else.
Makes sense. Let's see. So, Daxton Hill, where did you have Lewis seen on your tiers?
So he's a tier two guy just because he lacks some of the ball hawk numbers he's got. But, mm-hmm. you know, they are pretty good. He's all coverage, so no sacks, no fumbles forced. But 14 passes defensed and 2 interceptions for his career, a solid coverage grade, and he's a good athlete. If you ended up taking him, I would have no problem with that.
And then did you already say Nick Cross's name?
Nick Cross, I think, falls into the same category. Ah, yep, here, I got him here. So his coverage grade was only a 59.9, but he made a lot of plays on the ball, a little bit smaller at 6'2", 212, but overall a good athlete. I don't know if the Packers want to go back to Maryland, but that's something that you can't discount with the Packers either, is they tend to cluster some picks. So if they take a guy from a given school, chances are within the next couple of years, you'll see another guy off the board from that same school.
What do you think about positions that they would take multiple of in this draft? Goody tends to like to double up on some of these positions in recent years. Took 2 corners last year. Always takes multiple offensive linemen. Position that you think makes the most sense for Goody to be taking 2 or 3 guys at this year?
Other than the obvious one at receiver, I think that's what everybody would want him to do. I think it's probably more likely that he double dips, or maybe even more than that, on the edge. So if you're looking at edge rushers, maybe he tries to get a blue chipper early and then goes with maybe a little bit more of a project player later on. It seems like that's kind of how the draft sorts out too. So if you want the high-end talent, you kind of got to get it early and then see what you can get maybe later in the draft.
Let's talk about edge rusher. So the impact plays, that we called ball hawks for, the defensive backs. Do we have a name for that for, edge rushers?
Yes. So I use a number called production ratio. It was developed by Pat Kerwin, the NFL analyst. And I think he was a scout once way back in the day. But it's sacks and tackles for loss, add them together and divide by the amount of games played. He figures a good defender should have a production ratio of 1 or better. I bumped that up to 1.5 to really only focus on the higher end prospects. So tier 1 guys have a relative athletic score of 8 or better and a production ratio of 1.5 or better. So if you're talking about those guys on the edge this year, it's a pretty deep class. Amari Barno out of Virginia Tech, Kayvon Thibodeau out of Oregon, Sam Williams from Ole Miss, Jermaine Johnson out of Florida State, David Ojabo out of Michigan, George Karlaftis out of Purdue, D'Angelo Malone out of Western Kentucky. And I'm missing somebody here too, because he was qualified as a defensive lineman, so I didn't get him added into the edges later. Give me a second and I can find his name, but he went to San Diego State. I remember that. Cameron Thomas.
Oh, yeah. Cam Thomas.
6'4", 267 out of San Diego State. The raw numbers I had on him qualified him as a defensive lineman to start, but if you look at him as an edge, he still meets the tier one thresholds by a mile, actually.
And then your numbers are for their whole career, correct?
Yes. Yep.
I put together the same number, but again, I only have access to 2021. So my guy in 2021 who graded out, or who had the most of these plays, was Jermaine Johnson at 4.25 per game in 2021. One of the areas where he didn't do quite so well was in his pressure rate on those pass rushing plays. That's a stat that I really, really like for edge rushers. Kind of 10% is kind of the bare minimum threshold. If you're below 10%, I'm kind of not interested in you as a pass rusher, which Josh Pascal is actually, I think he's the only guy out of the players who meet that 1.5 threshold that you had, who didn't have a 10% or better pressure rate in 2021.
Yep. And I think there are some legit concerns there. That's actually, it's funny you mentioned that production or that pressure rate stat. That is the big concern I have with Trayvon Walker too.
Oh yeah, for sure.
You can talk about him not getting some of the counting stats just because of the guys who were around him, but he really wasn't getting after the quarterback at all in terms of a consistent down in, down out basis. He was not producing pressure. We all know the limits of sacks and quarterback hits and things like that. He just wasn't affecting the passer a whole lot at all. He's got unbelievable testing numbers, but I think if you have some pause about him, that's totally justified.
I actually took Trayvon Walker off my edge board and stuck him in with the defensive tackles just so that his numbers would not look so pedestrian. He graded out as the second worst edge defender out of everybody who I considered draftable when I had him classified like that. Couldn't do that to him. I stuck him in with the defensive tackles so that he'd at least be in the better half of guys. But if we're talking about, so you get the 1.5, what did you call it again?
Production ratio.
1.5 production ratio, and add in the pressure rate of 10% or better. Really, there's 1, 2, 3, 4 guys total who we don't have athletic numbers for. And then really only one guy who is at, two guys who are at an 8.5 or lower, which are Clarence Hicks and Michael Clemens. Everybody else in this group has really, really incredible testing numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Really.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know what? I forgot Kingsley Anibare, 7.4. Not terrible, but not elite either.
Right. Yeah, it's a good group. There's a lot of hay to be made here. And even if you expand things out a little bit more, one of the guys that kind of came in late among the edge rushers, since his pro day was so late, I think it was April 8th or so, was a guy named Scott Patchen out of Colorado. Really nice size, like 6'6", close to 270, and very productive, 1.4 production ratio, good athlete too. So there's value up and down the board.
This is definitely one of the deepest positions in this draft, which we had heard about for at least a year, that edge rusher was going to be just a really deep class in 2022. Makes a lot of sense that the Packers would take a guy or two out of the edge rusher group, even if they didn't have the need that they do, just because when the position is that deep, that means you can get some of the more elite guys later in the draft compared to other years.
Very much so.
Be nice to see him pick up a guy or two there, get him in the mix with Preston and Rashawn, and hopefully be in position to take over for Preston in a few years. Any edge rushers? You said you like Scott Patchen. Any other guys that you are particularly fond of?
So one guy that I am interested in that I don't really know what to make of is D'Angelo Malone out of Western Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
He played 61 career college games because Western Kentucky was one of the few schools that played a full slate during the COVID year anyway. And then he still came back for the year afterwards. So he's just been playing football for a billion years in college now, but he's been productive the entire time. A little bit on the smaller side, CBS Sports has him listed at 258 pounds. Most people have him closer to like 240, 243. A little bit on the smaller side, but he can get after the quarterback. He's got good testing numbers. He's an interesting sort of guy. A lot of people have him as an off-ball prospect too. Maybe you just find a way to get him on the field as your like fourth or fifth pass rusher and some obvious passing downs, or maybe some more rotational stuff. I think he's an interesting prospect.
All right. Well, John, I super appreciate you coming on today. We got a list of a bunch of really awesome names later in the draft to keep an eye on that make a lot of sense. Who are some of the guys in recent years that you have hit on? I know Jonathan Garvin, and I think also Kylan Hill were two guys that you had highlighted who then ended up being seventh round picks for the Packers, which, when you look at the pile of guys available by the time you get to the seventh round, it's kind of wild that you've hit on even just two of them.
Those felt pretty good. The other one that I've been banging the table on for a while now is Patrick Taylor. He hit out a lot of the numbers that we talked about, and it was cool to see the Packers pick him up as an undrafted free agent. The flip side of this is I almost had to get mad at myself 2 years ago when the Packers took A.J. Dillon. Because he was a guy that hit all the thresholds. He was a great passer. He was a great prospect. And it was like peak running backs don't matter season. And I remember at the time thinking, wait a second, I'd spent all this time saying he's a good prospect, he fits everything that they're looking for. Now I got to turn around and say, well, maybe they shouldn't have done that. Well, he's turned out to be a pretty good player. So, you know, you take your wins where you can get them, even if you have some questions about the process too. But every so often you hit on a couple. I think maybe Josiah DeGuara was another one too. I can't say for sure. But I got to give credit to one of my podcast listeners who pointed me towards him even a couple years ago too. So yeah, every so often you find someone.
You've got a great record over the last couple of years with running backs. Most of the guys that you've highlighted, whether the Packers took them or not, ended up doing incredibly well. I know Elijah Mitchell last year was a guy that you were talking about pretty early. I don't think I'd even heard his name before you were talking about him. And I ended up just totally falling in love with the guy. Of course, he went to San Francisco. He was the second running back that they drafted a couple rounds after they took Trey Sermon, and I think the third round. Of course, he ended up being their RB1 for the whole season. Painful to watch because I hate the 49ers, but still cool to see that pick pan out.
Yeah, it is fun. Every so often you really hit on a guy and it seems like everything kind of aligns. The other one that kind of stung, looking back at some of my names from last year, a tier two safety by the name of Talanoa Hufanga at USC. Yep. Ended up basically ending the Packers season in a couple different ways.
Painful. All right, yep. We need to get you hired by the Packers and stop making your podcast available to John Lynch, all right?
I guess so.
draft night. What are your plans? Are you doing anything fun? You got any fun draft traditions?
So we usually do something wing-related on Thursday night, but I think we might change it up a little bit this year. So we've been getting back. We've had some life stuff, some just busyness. We haven't had the smoker running on the weekends as much as we usually do. But I think now that I'm working from home a couple days a week, we might have the smoker firing on draft day, just so we have something going. I'm thinking about a London broil for Thursday night. We'll see. Ooh. We'll see how things shake out though. But, you know, I'd usually try to make some fun food for Thursday night.
Very nice.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. And then you stay up late and record a podcast and then kind of just let the rest of the draft play out. That's how I like to do it.
So I'm going to be smoking some country style ribs. That's going to be a fun one to do. Picked up some specialty barbecue sauce. I'm going to give it a try out. And then Wednesday night, as I do every year, I'm going to watch Draft Day, the movie, Kevin Costner. Super realistic show. Just absolutely critically acclaimed for real life accuracy, maybe dinged a couple of points for the cheering for Roger Goodell, but just a classic. I have to catch it every year. And then we're going to be doing a live stream on Packernet, and I'm going to try and talk you into coming on and join us for a few minutes there, because that'd be a blast to have you on there, all the guys over at Packernet, for round one of the draft.
We'll see if the kids cooperate. I wouldn't count on it. And I hear that you are about to have a bit of a life change here.
Yes, sir. Just a couple months left. We've got early August. We're expecting our first child. And my last couple guests I've had on the show, I wrap it up by asking for parenting advice. You dished out a little bit of that earlier in regards to helping out with my concentration and memory. Anything else, though, as I prepare to hang on for your dear life?
So everybody, like the gist, everyone wants to give you, you know, kind of the joke advice, you know, get plenty of sleep, do whatever you can. Look, to get serious for a second, what you need to do is buy one of these little 5-year journals. We've got one of these where you just write like a couple lines a day about what happened and make it a priority. It's a tradition for our family now. When we put my oldest to bed, it's me and his mom and our 7-month-old and me. And we just write a couple things down that happened that day. And it's been super meaningful to us to just have a little time to reflect together on what happened that day. And you look back over the months and they add up really quickly. So you've got to just take time to remember stuff like that. And if you want an additional thing like that, I use an app called 1 Second Every Day, where I just remind myself to grab a little snippet of video, and you'll be amazed at just how quickly those little kids grow up. But just remembering little moments like, that's how it sounded when they laughed when they were 2 months old, because, aww. Oh man, we were talking about this the other night, and it's hard to talk about it without getting emotional. We don't you know, have any plans, you know, things can change to probably have any more kids. And we were hearing our second kid, you know, do the little baby laughs type stuff. And it just hit both me and my wife at the same time. This is probably the last time we're going to hear that. Just remember that there's things like that happening every day. And if you don't take time to notice them, they're just going to be gone and you're going to wonder where they went.
You are so full of it. Before we started recording, I told you this was going to be one of the questions, and you said that you didn't have any advice for me. And here you come on dropping gold like that. I'm going to do that for sure, man. Thank you for the advice.
You bet. You bet.
All right. And thank you for coming on the show. Love to have you back on here again sometime. Everybody, again, that is John Meerdink on Twitter and Blue 58 Podcast, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Again, super recommend it. Make sure you check out at least one episode. You're probably going to get hooked. That's going to do it for us today. Thank you all for listening, and I'll catch you next time. Bye-bye.